con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross. And the highlight of all the podcasts is today because I'm talking to a man who really needs no introduction to football people. It's Trevor Francis. Trevor, thanks for joining us on the podcast. You're looking as fit as when you played.
That's a lovely compliment to start with. I think I'm in good health. You're never quite sure, but I try to exercise as much as I can. Well, not as much as I can. I should say every day I exercise. I'm 67 years of age now and still enjoying life, and obviously still my great love is football.
Well, I was looking, just before we get on to the career, I mean, you scored Premier League goals in your late 30s.
I mean, often when I talk to, Blue supporters, they always seem to mention, the game against Bolton when I was 16 years of age and I scored 4. But equally so, they always like to mention when I was 35 years of age playing for QPR as the player manager at Villa Park against a very good Aston Villa side, and I scored a hat-trick. Yeah. And my response to them is, what would you think is the better achievement? And they're never quite sure, and neither am I, to be honest.
But I think I know most Blues fans, that would be heads or tails job, that, by the way. That would cause them a dilemma. Just going back, though, to young lad at Plymouth, I know you love your football now, you watch it totally, but then, was it always football? Was there always that desire to be a footballer?
I think it was. Many young boys, they've got aspirations when they're growing up to be a professional footballer. From the age of 3, I was encouraged to,
From
3, yeah, because you have to remember my father, was an ex-professional, part-time professional, and, I got great encouragement, great help. He was always there to support me and to ferry me around to various games that I used to play for the school and the youth team. So that's what I wanted to be, but I was probably no different to millions of other young kids. I think it was only when I got to the age of about 14, 15 that I started to think, well, maybe I've got a chance of being a professional footballer. And obviously the big breakthrough was when I was offered apprenticeship forms at Birmingham City. Yeah. At the age of 15.
Yeah. Plymouth, it's a long way from Birmingham. How big of a thing for a young 15-year-old was leaving your home and your family?
It was quite tough. We had a very close-knit family. I mentioned my father, of course, my mother, Phyllis, and my brother and sister, Ian and Carolyn. But I also had an arrangement with Birmingham City that every 3 weeks, I was allowed to go home to Plymouth on the train. I always used to remember going to New Street Station, getting the 6:30 train and arriving in Plymouth North Road about just after midnight. And we did that every 3 weeks. But that didn't, that didn't go on indefinitely, because the reason it stopped was because after a year of my apprenticeship, I then progressed to the first team. So of course it wasn't possible, not that I wanted to go home in them days, because it was such a wonderful thing at the age of 16 to be playing first team football. And mum and dad and Ian and Carolyn, they tried to come to as many games home and away as they possibly could to watch me.
15, and all of a sudden you're catapulted. You weren't really, because you don't get anything in football, I don't think. I think you have to earn it. So they'd obviously seen something in you. Freddie had seen something in you, hadn't he?
Well, I played regularly at the age of 15 for the youth team. And that was my ambition, actually, when I left Plymouth, to try and cement my position as a regular player in the youth team. Now, some might hear that and think, well, this is somebody that didn't have a great ambition. That's not true. I was given a enormous setback at the age of 14 when I had a trial for English schools, for the English schools team, and I didn't progress past the first round. So that was a real setback, and I started then to have one or two little doubts about just how good am I? But obviously I came to Birmingham, scored regularly for the youth team, had a four or five games for the reserves, no more. And then, to my surprise, Freddie Goodwin, gave me an opportunity. And it was a game at Ninian Park against Cardiff. And I was substitute. And I used the word substitute and not plural, because in them days, of course, there was only one allowed on the bench. And I came on at half-time against Cardiff and played quite well. I struck the post second half. Obviously, I did okay in the eyes of Freddie Goodwin, because the following week, I was selected to play at St Andrews against Oxford. And I started the game and actually scored.
Absolutely. And, of course, Oxford then with the Atkinson brothers, Ron Atkinson and Graham Atkinson in. But, you know, that first game you remember quite clearly. But it seems to me that because of that England youth thing, that perhaps your confidence had taken a little hit. Did that increase your desire to do well, do you think? Because you seem to have always had great desire.
I don't know if it increased my desire. What it gave me was, it gave me a bit of a jolt. My father often said that one of the biggest factors in me not progressing past the first round, let me just explain, it was the pick of the southwest mm-hmm. against the pick of the southeast.
Right.
And the best from that game went forward to play for the South against the North. And I went into that game suffering with a little bit of the flu. I was not in particularly good health. I don't want to use that as an excuse. I just saw it as I wasn't selected to go beyond the first round. So I wouldn't say that the desire was always there. You know, I've always had a great desire, to do well and to be the best. And, never ever, went away.
That first team started a love affair, of course. You had two great love affairs, Helen, of course, but yet a love affair with Birmingham City supporters, which exists to this day.
I'm very fortunate, Tom, that, I've spent so many years in this area in the West Midlands, and to this day I'm so well received by Birmingham City supporters. It's more than 51-52 years since I made my debut, and it's quite remarkable that I'm still held in such high esteem. I was a little bit skeptical when I was given the opportunity to come back as manager, because I didn't want to tarnish my reputation. The relationship between Birmingham City supporters and Trevor Francis, I often say, was quite unique. Mm. Of course, there have been other, players who have, been incredibly well received. I think of like Alan Shearer when he went to Newcastle. The Geordie fans are quite, quite fantastic. But at that time, I don't think anybody outside of Birmingham quite realised just how close the rapport was between Birmingham fans and myself. I was just a young kid, 16 years of age, burst on the scene, scoring four in one game. I think it was two in the next game, away to Swindon, and the great Dave Mackay marked me. And, and it continued. And, I thoroughly enjoyed my time. There's many, many people in football who still think that, I was never happy at Birmingham. Of course I was happy. I'll always be indebted to Freddie Goodwin. He gave me the opportunity. And those supporters, when they still want so well of me after 50 years, I've got nothing but admiration for them. And obviously I played for a number of teams. I've managed a number of teams. But the result that I always look for first, and it'll always be this way, is Birmingham City.
Well, I know for a fact, and I think maybe, just maybe, you were surprised. We did a question and answer recently, and you couldn't believe after 51 years that you got a standing ovation. I mean, before and after, and during.
And it was obviously very, very pleasant. It was more than pleasant.
It was emotional.
It was emotional, and I can't say, I was shocked by it, because that feeling towards myself has never ever gone away, and it's a wonderful thing, to have it. If I could just quickly take you back, to when I was 16, can you imagine when you've got the whole of the ground, apart from a group of away supporters, of course, supporting, the away team, you know, the whole of the ground were just encouraging me to express myself, you know, to go and beat players, to shoot from 30 yards, you know. And the confidence was absolutely oozing out of me because it didn't matter if I made mistakes.
So the fans were a big part.
They were a big part. And let's remember, Tom, I was 16 years of age, so I had a ready-made excuse. If I gave the ball away or someone tackled me, well, you know,
the kid.
He's only the kid. He's only 16. He's still learning the game. And I was learning the game. And I was making mistakes. But, you know, I think back now to some of the senior professionals. You know, they must have had some patience with me.
You were part of, any Blues fan will tell you, the greatest strike force ever, Francis Latchford Hatton. I mean, something about you guys has just clicked.
Yeah, and that's you know, testament to the ability of Freddie Goodwin, who I've mentioned this now, who was my manager, who gave me my debut. He saw the potential in Latchford and myself. Could have just left it at Latchford and Francis, but he added to it, you know, by bringing in Bob Hatton, and that was a shrewd move. You know, Bob didn't play for his country like Bob and I. You know, we're both fortunate to have, you know, played for our country. But Bob Hatton was a great worker, great workhorse, you know, a good goal scorer. You know, used to work that left-hand side very intelligently. Used to get in that back post, good header of the ball. And he was a great foil for us too. Didn't quite get the, you know, acclaim that we did, but he didn't mind. He was part of, which probably, I've never thought of it along those lines until recently, that it's probably the best front three that Blues have ever had, yeah.
Not even a question. But these days we talk about the front three. Birmingham were pioneers in a front three in reality, weren't they?
They were, but, you know, we didn't really work on it. You know, I mean, you've got to remember also, Gordon Taylor played as well.
Yeah, left winger, yeah.
He was a left winger, so he was a very attacking player. So you could include Gordon as another, you know, one of the attacking forwards. I think in them days, the tactics and the, you know, the actual shape of the team, you know, wasn't worked upon like it is today. You know, my debut for England, for example, you know, I look back at the, you know, the front three, and basically it was three central strikers all wanted to play in central areas, and there was a reluctance for any of those three to play in wide areas. You know, we never worked on anything, Tom.
No, just never worked. It was quite strange. As I said, it probably just was something that clicked. You've already touched on it, but no Blues fan will forget that was there, and I was there, four goals against Bolton. I mean, I keep saying it, and I think Birmingham City saw the most inventive Trevor Francis. You went on to win major trophies and be part of great teams and England, but the inventiveness of a young 16-year-old, I think Blues fans saw the best.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that. You know, that game, do you know what I often think about that game, that with about 10 minutes to go, seven I think it was to be precise, I took a bang on my thigh, which immediately forced me off the field. And the substitute who came on for me had a couple of really good chances. And I think, you know, what could have been? But of course, that's being greedy. You know, to score four goals as a 16-year-old was, well, I can say it now. I wouldn't say it at the time. It was quite remarkable.
It was, unbelievably. You know, you were part of a team as well, that a youth team that came through, and I remember the lads that came through as well, the Gallaghers, the Burnsies, the Calderwoods. You had good lads coming through. Kenny Burns was quite a favourite as well, but a lot of us thought you didn't get on with him. I mean, I know you do now, but a lot of us thought you didn't get on with him.
Just briefly, before I mention Kenny, that injury that I suffered against Bolton, you know, made me a doubt for the Tuesday night playing for the youth team in the youth cup at Highbury.
Yeah.
I got myself fit. There was so much publicity surrounding the game because of the fact that I was down to play. But I found it so, so difficult. I struggled to perform at a high level my performance was far, far better for the first team on the Saturday. But moving on to Kenny, no, when we were at Blues, we weren't, what should I say, the best of friends. You know, we didn't particularly get on well. I had respect for Kenny, as I'm sure he had respect for me as a footballer. Mm-hmm. But we weren't friends. But he had the move to Nottingham Forest. And then a year later, I had the opportunity to join Nottingham Forest. And there were many people in the game who felt that possibly because of the fact that, you know, there was a breakdown in relationship between Kenny and myself, that I would decide not to go to Nottingham Forest. But that was never the case. You know, I had to be more professional than that. This was an opportunity for me to play for the greatest manager in the country, the only team who could, you know, compete with Liverpool. So many fine players at Nottingham Forest that I could not turn down that opportunity. When I went there, after a little while, I found Kenny a totally different person. Whatever Brian Clough had done to him, he had knocked him into shape because he was unrecognisable. And we became friends, and to this day, we remain very good friends. He calls me, I call him, and it's great that he feels the way he does, you know, towards me. I think Kenny won't mind me saying this. I was always the number one at Birmingham City, and nothing would ever change that. And I think there was a little bit of envy from Kenny towards myself.
He was also quite liked, but he wasn't Trevor Francis, and the Blues fans will tell you that.
Well, he was entitled to be well liked because he was an exceptionally talented footballer. Yeah. I mean, when he went to Forest, of course, he was converted into a central defender and he became, you know, player of the year, which is quite an accolade. Mm. Kenny was a fine player, a dirty player, but a fine player.
I think Blues fans, I mean, just before we get to that, there was another man that I saw before he passed away. We saw at St Andrews when he came down to a former player's do, who talked about you non-stop, and that was Roger Hind. He had a great affection for you, Roger.
And I had a great affection for Roger too. He was, a good defender, strong, physical, very correct. And he kind of acted, you know, unofficially as a minder for myself. I always recall the first holiday I ever had, when I met Helen, was over in Mallorca back in 1972, and she was in the same hotel as myself, and we got together. But what I was about to say was that as I walked in the hotel, first person I saw, Roger Hind. I thought, he's literally taken this to the extreme, like being my minder.
There was one incident I remember you talking about before, where I think it was against Cardiff when you were given dreadful treatment, and he tried to look after you there.
Well, Roger always tried to look after me on the field, and this was over the Easter period, and we were pushing for promotion, and it was a very important game, and a quite physical game. Mm. And as was customary, I was receiving quite a bit of, you know, physical contact, let's put it politely, and kicking towards the Tilden Road end, I got fouled outside the box, and there was a lot of, you know, shoving and pushing, and the referee was trying his best to sort it out, and it was about to sort of just, you know, simmer down when we see Big Roger, you know, who was stood on the halfway line, come pounding down the field. And as he's approaching, you know, the area where the incident happened, you know, both sets of players are saying, "Roger, Roger, leave it. You know, it's all sorted." And Roger's response was, he said, "Leave me alone." He said, "I have to do it. The crowd expected of me."
I mean, as we come to, we've got so many clubs to go through, but just you mentioned this relationship with the fans as a player. And at times, they affected your decisions on the pitch, didn't they? I remember one goal you scored, a free kick.
Well, one of my best goals I ever scored was back in 72. I'm quite specific with the year, simply because I know that who was at the match watching us, and that was Don Revie, because in a couple of weeks' time, we were due to play Leeds in the semi-final of the FA Cup. So he was obviously the Leeds manager at the time. And we had a free kick some, well, let's put it between 35 and 40 yards out. And it was a little bit, once again, towards the Tilton Road end, but towards the Kop. And I spotted the ball. And our two big centre-halves went forward, looking for me to clip a ball into the box. And the crowd, you know, in the Kop were all shouting, shoot, shoot, shoot. And I'm thinking, I can't shoot from here. It's too far out. But anyway, this shout of shoot continued. So I took three or four steps back, ran, and hit the ball as sweetly as I've ever hit a ball. And it went like an absolute rocket and nestled in the back of the net. And one of my greatest goals I ever scored for Birmingham. I've gone on record as saying that I don't know how many there were in the Kop. Let's put it at 15,000. There's 15,000 Blues fans who had an assist for that goal.
You've talked about that relationship with them, and I know how I felt as a supporter. Do you realise how difficult was it for you to move away, though, to go to Forest? Was it a tough decision, or do we have to accept it's your career and you move?
Well, there was obviously a tinge with sadness, leaving, friends who had been Blues fans for years and years, and but I had to do it. I felt, for the betterment of my career. You know, I had been at Blues for 9 years. I had tried to get away on one or two occasions without success. But I thought, well, the time has come when I really need to start thinking about winning things. And also I wanted to establish myself in the England team and to try and improve myself as a player. Because undoubtedly, when you're playing week in, week out with respect to Blues players at Nottingham Forest, top players, It makes such a difference. I realised that later in my career, a little bit later in my career, when I went to Italy, playing, but in front of, one or two, which I'll mention in a minute, absolutely top class midfield players, because part of my strength as a front player, I always felt, was my movement. I had good movement.
Mobility.
Yeah. And but it's pointless having that movement if you haven't got somebody, A, who can see the pass, and B, somebody who can execute the pass. So, I think back to my time at Blues, when I would make runs and think, well, I'm in here. I found the space, got away from the defender, but unfortunately, the player in possession hasn't got the ability to find me. So what would have been a goal-scoring opportunity did not materialise.
So you would have had even more goals, probably. So you go to first million-pound player, and all the arguments, it wasn't, but it was over £1 million. I mean, you know that for a fact. But you signed for Brian Clough.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, I'm still stopped, by, excuse me, by football supporters who want to know the absolute truth. Was it £1 million or was it, a pound less? Well, that was Brian Clough being flippant, as he often was. And whatever he commented, it made, sometimes back page, but sometimes front page news. He was compelling viewing and compelling reading as well. So, the actual figure was £1,150,000. But it was a great honour, to be the first £1 million player. To think that the previous record was half that fee, 500,000. Yeah. So, I mean, we shouldn't forget that Birmingham City did very, very well out of the deal, because there were so many clubs who showed interest in myself. And if the fee had been, you know, somewhat less than a million, then I would have had a number of clubs I could have selected and chosen. But I'm not complaining, you know.
Well, two European Cups, I wouldn't think so, to be fair.
Birmingham City, you know, they deserve to get £1 million. Jim Smith, you know, insisted on £1 million. And also, you know, Nottingham Forest got a good return as well from it.
But you mentioned further your career, and as I said, two European Cups. I mean, you did just that, didn't you?
It was fantastic, you know, to actually... I say fantastic, but I also recognise that I was quite fortunate that, you know, I was selected to play my first ever game in Europe in the final against Malmo. And, you know, much to the disappointment of one or two boys, i.e. Martin O'Neill specifically, who, you know, was left out of the team. And I was selected. I think my selection from Brian Clough, you know, put a little bit of added pressure, if that was possible to have any greater pressure, you know, as a £1 million footballer playing in a European Cup final. But I went out there to try. Obviously, I wanted to do well for myself, for my family, you know, for the football club, but in particular for Brian Clough, because I wanted to, you know, justify his selection. And I think I did that.
Well, he scored the winner. Headed winner. I mean, everybody remembers the winning goal. But, you know, what? Just briefly, what was Clough like? Because he comes across... I mean, he's compulsive, as you say, to listen to, but I would imagine he can be a tough manager to work for.
Well, I think so many of the, you know, the top managers, you know, have that ruthless streak in them and that toughness. That's part of being a leader. You know, Brian Clough... was exceptionally talented. He didn't spend a lot of time on the training field. He wanted the team to play in a certain way. He had one or two set pieces that he wanted the team to stick to and not to deviate from. But he was absolutely brilliant at man management. He never missed anything on that field. He was quite brilliant. And he had that toughness in him, which it transmitted to the players. And when you went on that field, I mean, many people used to say to me, oh, he ruled by fear. Well, that's not strictly true, because if you're playing with fear, you can't express yourself like Nottingham Forest players express themselves. You know, we passed the ball. We were a good side. You know, we were a very, very good team. But there was that... There was that in the back of your mind all the time. You cannot let this guy down. One of the reasons was because he had a vicious tongue, and you know, he would use it. Listen, it didn't matter who you were, you know, whether you were an apprentice or whether you were the £1 million footballer. He treated everyone, you know, with the same respect. If you let him down, he will let you know about it straight away. And I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, if you go on that field and you're not totally committed, there's opportunities when, you know, he can see that you're not closing down. You're not, you know, that extra 5 yards that you need to run. I mean, with Brian Clough, you don't even think about not running. Now, we're all human, you know, and as footballers, if you can get away with it at times, you think, well, okay, you know, that extra 5-10 yards, I will bother today. Not with Brian Clough. You do not ever think that.
I mean, you went to Man City, played for John Bond and scored plenty of goals there. But it was Italy then, Sampdoria. How big a thing was that in your career to go to Italy?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Man City. And after the first season there, I went off with England to play in the World Cup in Spain. And little did I know that Sampdoria were actually watching me whilst I was playing for my country in that World Cup. I thought that when the World Cup had finished, I was going to go on holiday for a couple of weeks and then return to Main Road with Man City. But that wasn't the case. The moment it finished, Sampdoria got in touch with my agent, and I was actually on holiday when I had a call to say, you know, could I get myself from Marbella to Nice They put on a plane for me, and I met up with a Sampdoria president in Monte Carlo, and he put a proposition to me, totally out of the blue. I'd never given it any consideration at all, going to Italy, and I agreed immediately, and no regrets. It was one of the best decisions I ever made. You know, playing football in Italy was just wonderful. You know, at the time, you have to remember, 82, that World Cup that I talked about, Italy won it. Mm. So you can imagine the atmosphere in the country, you know, in the start of the season was looked forward to with great anticipation. You know, not only did you have the World Cup winners playing, you know, week in, week out, you had an influx of fantastic talent from all over the world. You know, every team were permitted 2 foreign players, and there were some wonderful players there. You know, our first game was against Juventus, and they had, you know, a galaxy of stars, you know, Italian stars, players like Zoff, Scherea, Gentile, Cabrini, Tardelli, Paolo Rossi. And the 2 foreign players were the Pole, Boniek, and the French genius, Michel Platini. What a team that was. But, you know, there were so many top players. I was fortunate enough to play with Liam Brady. Mm-hmm. You know, Liam had a couple of years at Juventus, came to Sampdoria. And that's what I was talking about earlier. You know, having somebody behind you who can actually see a pass and then execute it, it makes such a difference. Liam, his left foot was like a wand. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest midfield players that I've ever played with. Mm-hmm. I had 2 years with Liam. And then he went off to Inter Milan, and Graham Souness came in. Mm. And Graham, a different type of player to Liam, but equally very, very talented. Mm. And actually, I played a little part in that deal because, you know, the president of Sampdoria, his name was Paolo Mantovani, was he was interested in getting Brian Robson, you know, to Sampdoria. But Brian had only recently joined Manchester United, and Ron Atkinson was very, very reluctant to even talk, you know, to Sampdoria. So I remember it was a Monday morning, and the deadline was getting closer and closer. And Mr. Mantovani said to me, he said, "Is there anybody else you could recommend in England?" I said, "Well, get yourself up, or get somebody up to the Olympic Stadium on Wednesday night." It was the European Cup final. Liverpool against Roma. And I said, "Go and watch Graham Souness." And of course, he signed Graham Souness. And Graham, like myself, absolutely loved playing football in Italy.
Was it a new level of professionalism, the way the Italians did things, from training to eating and all that sort of stuff?
It was an eye-opener, yes. You know, their approach was very, very professional. You know, the players were incredibly knowledgeable on the game. They'd grown up, you know, with tactics. And, you know, whereas I spoke earlier about, you know, the tactics and the coaching wasn't so prevalent in English football, you know, Italian football was very, very, you know, different. But, I mean, I enjoyed everything about Italy. Of course, you know, as you know, one of my pastimes is eating in good restaurants and enjoying nice food and nice wine. The fashion over there, the clothes was just sensational. The climate was wonderful. And of course, you know, pitting your wits against some of the top defenders in world football, I think it helped me, you know, for my country, you know, playing against man-to-man marking and, you know, teams who were absolutely top class at defending, you know,
and very physical, Trev.
Very physical, but that's, you know, you rely on referees to you know, make the right call. But you know, I mentioned Boniek, I mentioned Platini. There was Rummenigge, there was Zico, ooh, there was Maradona, there was Socrates.
Greatest, to be fair.
Passarella, you know. I mentioned Kenny Burns earlier. I think Passarella would rival Kenny as one of the dirtiest players I've ever played against.
But there, from there, it's Atalanta.
Yeah, I had 4 years at Sampdoria, and they were great 4 years where we always, you know, aimed to compete at the top level. Slightly different, you know, coming to play for Atalanta. There was a chance of me going to Manchester United with Ron Atkinson, but I decided that, you know, to stay in Italy. Atalanta, totally different Atalanta to today. I mean, the current Atalanta side is terrific today, and they're in the Champions League, but you never have, you know, expected that, you know, I'm going back 40 years now. But Atalanta were a little bit like, who can I describe? A little bit like a West Brom, who were a team that were like a yo-yo team, with respect to West Brom supporters, of course. And that's how Atalanta were. From the very first game, they made, you know, they didn't try to hide the fact that they were competing to stay in the league. Success for them was
staying up.
The very first game happened to be away to Sampdoria. And I recall I played up front by myself, which was totally different to Sampdoria, because I'd play with Mancini and Vialli, and we were always on the front foot, always attacking. But, you know, this game, I mention this game simply because I always recall after 20 minutes, one of our players was booked on a throw-in for time wasting. That was the first game of the season, and we're 20 minutes into the game, and I thought, oh, this is going to be an interesting season.
And then you got the chance then to link up with the pal again, Graham Souness at Rangers.
Yeah, Graham made it quite clear to me that he'd like for me to come and play for Rangers, and primarily to play, you know, using my vast experience in European football. I was a little bit disappointed that I didn't get more opportunities to play in the league. And when we got knocked out of the European, I think it was the European Cup. Yeah, the European Cup. I said to Graham, with about 2 months of the season to go, you know, would you allow me to move on now? And he was quite sympathetic to my situation, and I moved on to QPR. But before I mention that, that was absolutely fantastic as well, being up in Glasgow. Being part of a city that have got two of the biggest football clubs in world football.
You picked the wrong one, in my opinion. But you're right. You have to be there to understand that.
You have to be there, and you quickly recognise that every time you pick up a newspaper, the only two teams that are mentioned is Rangers and Celtic. You know, forget Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs. Doesn't matter. It's only Rangers and Celtic. And it was a wonderful experience. And, you know, I've got so much admiration, you know, for the, you know, Rangers supporters. I'm sure if I'd been a Celtic player, I'd be saying the same about, you know, Celtic. You know, they're the nearest I came in terms of, you know, their affection, you know, for the football. You know, to Italian supporters.
Really?
Yeah, it was wonderful, you know, being part of, you know, Glasgow.
Well, amazing. But then Jim Smith come calling, and QPR, and, you know, you're still playing.
Well, I still felt that I had a lot to offer. You know, I wanted to prove Graham Souness wrong, not in a nasty way, because we were pals, of course, you know, but Graham was a little reluctant to play me. And at 35 years of age, I was scoring, playing regularly, by the way, for QPR in the top division, and scoring quite regularly.
One in two and a half again.
Was it? Well, yeah. I mean, I have to mention that the London press were actually advocating that I should make a return to the national team, to the England team. Now, at 35 years of age, nice to read it, but I recognise that was never going to happen. But I think the point it proves is that I was still able to play well at 35, and the game I mentioned, which is the highlight of my time at QPR, was the day we beat Aston Villa 3-1.
Proving that age is but a number. And this was your first opportunity to get into management.
Yeah. You know, Jim Smith who was the QPR manager, had the opportunity to go to Newcastle. So it left a vacancy in the hot seat at Loftus Road. And I was approached by the young chairman. I say young, he was only 22, 23 years of age, if I would like to, you know, to be the new manager. So I jumped at the opportunity. It was tough, you know, playing and managing. I brought Don Howe in as a number two. Don was one of the finest coaches I've ever worked with. Of course, I worked with him at QPR, but I'd seen, you know, what he was capable of in my days with England. He was outstanding.
So, player manager, and but then back to, was it back to playing full time at Sheffield Wednesday?
It was, because Ron Atkinson was the manager. He had tried on a couple of occasions as West Brom and Manchester United manager to buy me, didn't succeed, and finally got his player in myself when he was manager at Sheffield Wednesday. So I've got so much to you know, to thank Ron for. Thoroughly enjoyed my time there as a player under Ron. He was great to play for. But then Ron had the opportunity to move to Aston Villa. And I was recommended by Ron to take over from him at Hillsborough. And I jumped at the opportunity. Big club, Sheffield Wednesday. Great fan base. And I could never have envisaged having such a great time there as a manager. A little bit as a player, because I played till I was 39. But as I was improving the team, so I was making it more and more difficult to select myself. But we had some wonderful players at Sheffield Wednesday. One of my best ever signings was Chris Waddle. He was, I mean, I signed him from Marseille for £1 million, and what a signing he was. I wouldn't think that Sheffield Wednesday, you know, supporters have ever seen a better player than Chris Waddle. But there was Chris. There was Chris Woods, the Glasgow Rangers and England goalkeeper. I signed him. Andy Sinton from QPR, Des Walker from Sampdoria, you know, Mark Bright from Crystal Palace. You know, we had some very good players. Paul Warhurst, I signed as a central defender, and then I ran into difficulty with injuries to four of my strikers. They were all missing, so I converted Paul Warhurst into a centre-forward. And his performances were quite incredible. He was actually selected, you know, for the England squad. Never played for England, but you know, he played such a big part in that 93 season when we got to two cup finals. You know,
league, one season, that's all going.
League Cup and FA Cup. Sadly, we lost both to Arsenal, the FA Cup on a replay on a Thursday night at Wembley. But you know, when you think that my first season, we'd just come out of what was the old second division then, and we finished third behind Leeds and Man United. The next season we were seventh, got into two finals, seventh the third season. Then the fourth season, I started to consider changing one or two players. I felt that we need to freshen it up, bring in one or two younger players. We had a dip in form, we finished 13th, and I was sacked. Huge regret. I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And, you know, when you look now at Sheffield Wednesday, so sad to see where they are currently in the league.
League Two now, of course, or League One, rather. Tell us a little bit about your feeling, having all you'd been through, the feeling when Blues came knocking.
When they came knocking, my first thoughts were, I have to take this opportunity. Then I started to think about, am I doing the right thing here? Because I've spoken at length in this interview about, you know, the rapport between Birmingham City supporters and myself, and you know that there's only one thing that's sure in management: you're going to get a sack. And I thought, well, you know, I've got to be confident. I've got to go and give it my best shot. I can't, you know, not take this opportunity. So I did it. And I always recall the first game was on a Sunday lunchtime. against Sheffield United. And I remember travelling to the game by myself, you know, for a lunchtime kickoff. And I was looking at all the supporters, you know, coming to the game and the blue and white scarves. And I started to get quite emotional. I did. And I actually had to pull over and get myself together. And there were many times, you know, throughout my time as a manager at Blues when I felt quite emotional about the thing, because I think that, you know, there was an affinity, you know, towards the football club. You know, you've got to remember that, you know, they gave me my opportunity as a 15-year-old, and I'll always be grateful for them, you know, for doing that. And I wanted to go there and give Blues what they were so wanting, and that's, you know, top class football. Yeah. I didn't quite achieve it, but God, it wasn't for lack of trying.
For sure. You signed Steve Bruce to the club, but you had to train at the civil service ground, and it certainly wasn't Italy, was it?
No, it wasn't, and I didn't quite listen. I wanted to join the football club, full stop. Whatever followed, I was willing to get on with it. But when you're signing players from the likes of Steve Bruce and Manchester United and other players from Everton and from Chelsea, and you're bringing them into, you know, facilities that, no exaggeration, teams playing non-league football would have better facilities than what we had for training. Mm-hmm. You know, in hindsight, I probably should have just waited a little bit longer rather than going out and making a statement by bringing in, you know, a few top class, you know, Premier League players. But I did it, and you know, gradually things improved. But, you know, I just got on with my job. I tried to get on with as best as I could. The first season, there were many, many players at the football club that needed changing. And I spent so much time in the office, not on the training field, trying to change things around. The second season was so much more enjoyable because I was on the training field where I want to be. And we had some great times. We played some great football. You know, I'm sure Blue supporters will look back with great memories on many, many games. There's two that stand out for me. One was away to Oxford. One was away to Stoke. Mm. Why do they stand out? Because we scored 7 goals on both occasions. Quite
mayhem at Stoke, I remember.
Quite unique. But no, the playoff matches were, you know, quite memorable. Sadly, for the wrong reasons. And of course, we shouldn't forget that wonderful performance that we put up against the mighty Liverpool down in Cardiff, the League Cup final, when we were so, so close, you know, to winning.
To be fair, Trevor, you were robbed.
Well, I look back and I think if there had been VAR in those days, like there is now, I'm sure David Ellery would have looked at VAR and realised that he would had to have given a penalty. And so that's why I say, you know, we could have won the final.
What a Liverpool team that was, Fowler and co. And Gerrard. I mean, you in the extra time, you played them off the park, let's be fair, in extra time.
Well, we were severely handicapped because our captain, Martin O'Connor, you know, was struggling with a knee injury on the stroke of full time. So, you know, he had to play the whole of extra time, you know, with an injury. So we were more or less, should I say, 10 men, 10 and a half men then we had.
But you've three playoffs, Worthington Cup final. Sadly, Trev, it all ended acrimoniously. That must have been tough for you because of the way you were revered. But no matter how it ended with the owners, the fans didn't let that affect their affection for you.
No, and that was really, really pleasing. You know, that was the one aspect of joining the football club as a manager that I was very, you know, nervous about, you know, damaging my, you know, wonderful reputation and my, you know, rapport with the Birmingham City supporters. But that didn't happen. I would like to have left the football club, you know, shaking the hand of David Gold, David Sullivan and Karen Brady, thanking them for giving me the opportunity to work for them for 5 years. But it didn't quite happen like that. And, you know, there were one or two, you know, critical comments, you know, from them towards myself. And it wasn't necessary. You know, I'm a great believer that, you know, whoever your owner is, regardless of what you think about them, they're the guys who own the football club, and they're paying me a nice salary every week. And they did that for 5 years. And I'll respect anyone that does that. It should have been dealt differently.
Respect is a two-way affair, Trip.
It is. And, you know, there was absolutely no need for the way that they conducted themselves, you know, when I was leaving the football club. It was unfortunate. But I think that what was more important to me is that Blues supporters still hold me in the highest esteem. And that means everything to me.
Do you think you might have stayed at the club or perhaps been there longer had you not sold Paul Pesky's leader?
No, I don't think so. Not
you don't
at all.
Think so?
No, because that was in my first year.
Yeah.
That was only a couple of months into my job as Birmingham City manager. I've got absolutely no complaints about the amount of time that I was given. You know, to be given 5 years, you know, to get the team promotion, is more than satisfactory. No, there's no complaints at all about, you know, the amount of time. I just wish that, you know, things could have finished more amicably. You know, there was no need, you know, for them to conduct themselves and, you know, behave as they did when I left the football club, because, you know, I consider myself to be a decent human being, and I can always look at it from two sides. You know, I'm not perfect. I've already said to you that, you know, I was given more than enough time. Listen, I would like things to have been differently. You know, I'd like for them to have had a budget, you know, so I knew from, you know, the start of the season what money there was to, you know, to spend. You know, a lot of things I would like to have had differently. But, you know, that's not me, you know, having a moan up. I've said that I thank them very much for giving me 5 years to manage the football club.
The club at the moment is in dire need of good PR. How come you're not involved?
Well, I'd like to be involved in some capacity. You know, I talk to some of my, you know, colleagues, you know, who I've played with, you know, up and down the country. You know, one or two that come to mind at Nottingham Forest. I speak with John McGovern quite regularly, and John's been an ambassador now at Nottingham Forest for a number of years. Brian Robson's an ambassador at, you know, Manchester United. And I could go on and on, you know, naming players. I think that, you know, it's something that Birmingham City should seriously consider, you know, with myself, because, you know, why not? I don't think they have an ambassador, do they, at the football club?
They have match day ambassadors who go around to the corporate lounges with players who are on the pitch, but they don't have a club ambassador that is there to 24/7 promote the name of the club.
Yeah, because there are so many areas where I can assist, you know, the owners of the football club. First of all, you know, my involvement with them, I have to say straight away that I would not want to be involved in any capacity, you know, with Lee Boyer's job. You know, Lee Boyer is the manager of the football. Listen, if he wants any kind of advice or he wants to talk to me about players, for sure, you know, I'd be there. But I've finished with management. No interest at all. But, you know, I can be of help to the guys in the boardroom. You know, I know for sure I can be of great help to the academy director. You know, because, you know, when I've played for the football club as a youngster, and I know what, you know, Jude Bellingham often thought about, you know, the you know, being with myself, and you know, when I used to go to see him train, you know, I look back on that and think, well, you know, if ever there was a situation, you know, where there was a top player at the football club and, you know, he needed to speak, you know, with myself, and, you know, I think it would be fantastic for the football club to have me. Listen, that I feel as if I'm, like, you know, trying to sort of, you know, promote myself.
Engineer the job.
Yeah,
no, I get that.
Which I'm not doing. All I'm saying is that many, many of my colleagues who have played with are ambassadors at football club, and it's something that I think Birmingham City should think about.
And you want to do. Who's the best player you've played with, Trev?
Played with? Well, I have to think on the spot at this, and you know, I'm thinking of club football, and obviously I'm thinking of international footballer. I need to mention three or four. Yeah. With England, I would say Kevin Keegan, Glenn Hoddle, Brian Robson. Club level, I think of Liam Brady, Graham Souness, and John Robertson at Nottingham Forest.
John Robertson.
There's a nice little group of players there.
It cost a few quid, they would, today.
You'd like them in your squad, wouldn't you?
And your toughest opponent?
Probably Passarella, the Argentinian captain. Gentile, the Italian World Cup winner. Tough, tough boys. The late Norman Hunter. He was a tough guy to play against. But football has changed now, hasn't it? You know, I think that for many, many reasons, I'd love to be playing football now. You know, the surfaces are so different. You know, the interpretation of the rules from referees.
Nobody kicking you.
Oh, nobody would kick you. I mean, that challenge yesterday, you know, from Pogba, I mean, everyone said straight away the referee's made a mistake. It's a red card. Well, I'm sorry, but 30, 40 years ago, that would have been, what a good challenge that is.
That would have got him a new contract. Trev, I've got to say, it's been, I mean, there's so much more that we haven't talked about. But of course, people can find out, they can buy your book, One in a Million, because you talk at length about all the things we've talked about there.
Can I do a deal with you? Can I come back and do another one in 10 years' time?
But get the book, folks, because it's all, there's so, honestly, we could have done this for 3 hours non-stop, but so much we've not had the chance to talk about, and your love of music and all those other things as well. Thanks very much to Trevor Francis. Leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think about it, good, bad or indifferent. It's the podcast. It's The Game's Gone. Till the next time, take care.